Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Hey, everybody, it's the Damage Report. I'm Johnny Roll. Jared Jackson, as always on Wednesdays, is joining me in the studio.
The report shall be damaged.
Yes, exactly. If anything is damaged, it's probably my vocal cords. We've got, as always, a very big show for you. We're going to be talking about Hurricane Florence. That is the big story, obviously, because it is bearing down on the East Coast, and things are kind of looking worse and worse every day. There are some updates on the behavior, the expected behavior of this storm, and some of the preparation to, on the one hand, get certain people out of the area, and on the other hand, leave some people behind. We'll be talking about both of those stories. Relatively early in the show, we're also going to be talking about a new study of the lethality of different types of guns. So in mass shooting situations, semi-automatic versus non-semi-automatic weapons. We're going to be talking about that. Very interesting information, some of which I was quite, not necessarily surprised, but glad to see, because it'll help to get more people to focus on this issue. One area I actually dispute, so that will be fun. And later on the show, I want to talk about the midterm elections with JR, because Donald Trump has a new theory about what would happen were he to be impeached. And it is a very Trumpian sort of response to that. Obviously, it's obviously would be a disaster, but he gets very Trumpy about it. And yesterday was 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think we've tracked down one of the worst 9/11 tweets. Who is it?
I mean, but the thing is, there's probably a lot to choose from. Like, you may not be surprised, but you may not be able to guess it either.
Yeah, that's true. And look, honestly, I don't follow a lot of horrible people on Twitter. I do get notifications when Donald Trump tweets, which has been a mental health exercise on a daily basis. Yeah. But we will talk about that. Before we get into the hurricane, though, I did want to mention I saw Jordan Null had tweeted a headline having to do with Ron DeSantis from one of the newspapers down in Florida. So Ron DeSantis is the Republican nominee for the governor's race, and he's going against Andrew Gillum. And Ron DeSantis is the guy who said monkeying with the race.
He didn't want to monkey this whole thing.
He didn't want to monkey
this up. The progress that they've made in Florida, of course, yeah.
Exactly, because he's running against an African-American. So, you know, just weird, drops this weird phrase. It's not a phrase. And then we find out that he'd been speaking with at these racist group gatherings, but still not a racist. And now the headline is he's apparently still needs to flesh out his platform before talking with the media. He doesn't feel comfortable talking about what he would do as governor yet, because he hasn't spent enough time thinking about working with experts to flesh out his platform. Which is amazing, because he's already won the primary. He is the candidate. He's already beaten other Republican candidates. By the way, with Donald Trump's endorsement, you're seeing him there in that absolutely pathetic ad. Donald Trump endorsed him, even though the candidate himself admits there's not enough information out there to actually support him. And he's not ready to even tell you why you should support him. But he did love Donald Trump, so he got the endorsement, and Florida's Republicans flocked to him because of that.
What does that tell you? Yeah, you can be completely vapid. You can have no stance. You can have no agenda. You can have no plan. But you can still win the primary because you just say, I'm all about Donald Trump, and I'm in the right part of the country that cares about nothing else. Mm-hmm. Now, also, being in support of Donald Trump, you're also not sure of what your platforms are supposed to be. I'm sure Ron DeSantis has thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he has things he wanted to get done before he got into politics. Those things don't matter anymore. Because in this world of politics, and this generally goes across the board, you have to toe the line. So even if a new Democrat comes in, I've always said this before, when a Democrat comes in and they have agendas, they have plans, they have things they want to get accomplished, then they get in there and then the system and the grind of politics comes in and they become politicians. Yeah. And I was like, what happened to that guy who wanted to do these 5 very serious things and then one of them halfway got done and said, I'm now a politician, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
It's the life of the politician that changes them. In this case, Ron DeSantis probably had something he wanted to do that was probably horrific anyway. Now, in the meantime, you support a guy who has a shifting agenda, who is a self-serving person being in the president. So if you're supporting him 100%, you don't know what policies to stand for. You don't know what you're for or what you're against, because those things shift and change all the time with your president. So if you follow a guy who has nothing behind his eyes, then you're going to also have nothing behind your eyes.
I think you're right. I think part of it is that change that happens, and part of that change is driven by now he needs to know what the donors want him to do.
Yeah, because you're waiting for the orders.
You're waiting for your marching orders. He's going to need a lot of money to beat Andrew Gillum, and he's not going to let his ideals stand in the way of that. Yeah, and the Republicans, they love to say, and they have long loved to say, that the Democrats, they just use identity politics. They say, vote for us because of your identity. We vote for people because of their identity. What is this? It is faith that this guy, he's a white guy, he likes Trump, he said monkey with, or monkey it up, or whatever.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I know what he's about. We share these certain values, not attached to policies, again, because he refuses to talk about policies. These are identity things that people, like, they want, just say you're with Trump. And then everyone will know you probably like the same people Trump likes, you hate the same people Trump hates. Would you count out a candidate for Congress who in a Republican primary literally wore a Trump mask? I don't know that we could write that person off at this point, because I think a lot of people would just say, ooh, I like the looks of that.
I mean, Ron DeSantis did it in an ad.
He effectively wore a Trump mask.
So he did it, tongue in cheek. He'd be like, oh, my kid, hey, build that wall, son. All that stuff, right? He was doing that, but it was supposedly tongue in cheek, but it was also, hey, I will do anything to back up this guy.
Yeah. So, look, obviously the situation is a little bit ridiculous, but also serious, because we're talking about the governor's position of a massive and very important state. Obviously, the governor of Florida, that has electoral consequences outside of just that race. But let's turn to other news from the East Coast. Incredibly important and worrying information about Hurricane Florence, which we've known for several days now, at the very least, is a big storm. As Donald Trump has said, it is very, very wet. It has a lot of water. He literally said that. But it is a serious situation. More than 1 million people are being ordered to evacuate ahead of the storm. It's moving in towards the Carolinas, although apparently slowing down a little bit. Not necessarily in terms of the wind speed, in terms of how fast it's moving across the water towards the coast. Currently, it's sustaining 130 mile per hour winds, making it a Category 4 storm. So extremely dangerous in terms of the impact it could have on both property and lives there. Likely to make landfall Friday or Saturday in North Carolina as a Category 3, with winds still around 120 miles per hour. Now, what I had heard this morning was that it is, as I said, slowing down, which means that it might be a little bit less damaging when it gets there, but it is expected to stay on the coastline for longer, multiplying how much damage it can do over time. Many people, as we said, are being told to evacuate. There are some people, as in all of these storms, that are choosing not to, though. And the messaging campaign has to be the same as it always is. This is not one you want to ride out. Please get out of there. Some of the highways have been converted, so all of the lanes on both sides are moving away from the coast. But again, some people stay. I've never understood it. I've never lived in one of those areas, I guess.
I've never lived in those areas either, but I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and there was a flood, 93. And so, but like, it wasn't like hurricane. And we're in the middle of the country, you know, it was just like rain, and there was some problems with some, with the overflooding of the Mississippi, right? Yeah. So there's that. But, so in hurricane areas, there's people who like live this out and know how to go through it all and do it consistently. I will never understand it, but people survive it all the time. But then there's those unknown factors. They get people that do survive it and ones that are confident, but then don't. And we don't know where that line goes. That's why it's always, I think, me being, you know, the bubbled Californian, I would leave. You got to get out. You don't know what to expect and how much larger and more powerful these are getting.
And by the way, we're not talking about the people who have difficulty leaving due to either advanced age or especially lack of resources to do so. Obviously, there's some people who it's extremely costly to pack up your family to move to stay somewhere for multiple days.
Stay where, right?
I guess in a hotel, it could end up costing hundreds, thousands of dollars. And if this happens frequently, I can understand how some of those people might think, I can't afford to do this. We know that a significant portion of our entire population can't deal with any sort of emergency over $400. And so if it's happening several times a year, I understand that. I'm saying some people don't want to leave. And that is unfortunate because this is the sort of storm that is probably going to take lives. And that's why we were so scared about it. Now, we are going to take our first break, though. When we come back, though, as I alluded to, there are some people who are not being allowed to leave that area, even in the areas that are under the greatest warning of need to evacuate. We're going to be talking about that and taking a look, a wider view of the current state of hurricanes and tropical storms in the area, because apparently there's more coming after this. Welcome back, everyone. This is The Damage Report. Nailed it. I'm John Iadarola. Jared Jackson is here as well. And we're talking about Hurricane Florence. So obviously, the effort is on right now to get as many people away from the coast as possible until we know more about how long Hurricane Florence will be lingering in the area, how it might travel along the coast. But I did see this story. And so my co-host from Thursday's show, Piper Perabo, was tweeting about this. And a huge number of inmates in a county prison are going to be left in the area. There's 934 inmates and as many as 119 prison staff at the Jasper County Prison were ordered to stay behind despite a mandatory evacuation for that region. Guards would not have the choice to opt in or out if they're scheduled to work during Hurricane Florence. And by the way, so they have these maps, and the maps have color-coded areas for how severe the need to evacuate is. I personally would just say you have to evacuate if it's a dangerous area, but they do have it color-coded up to a dark red. This prison is in the darkest classification, and they're going to be left there. These guards, against their will, obviously the prisoners against their will as well. And if you recall, when Katrina happened, a significant number of prisoners, some have died, just died. They weren't prioritized, obviously. It was a huge disaster. It is possible that we could be looking at that same sort of situation.
Well, we don't
care
about prisoners, right? They all deserve to die, right?
If you're in prison, that's how some people will respond.
True. Shouldn't have done the crime. You deserve to die. Is that the new slogan?
I saw someone tweet that to what Piper had tweeted.
I totally was just trying to make it up. I was trying to make up the most disgusting thing you could say about another human being, another American, which you could venture to say, that are in prison. I'm not sure if you lose your citizenship status, your right to live status. I mean, is it just a death penalty for anything? Let's also think about the potential crimes that many people are in prison for. I mean, are we assuming that everyone's a murderer?
Did everyone shoot someone in the face?
Could have been anything. Could be simple drug possession.
Could be.
Which we know is a large percentage of prison population anyway. Or just some kind of crime that was associated with something with a drug paraphernalia type of thing. Anyway, outside of that, I thought we cared about law enforcement. I don't know. Do prison guards, are they considered law enforcement?
It seems like they should be.
I mean, they're kind of continuing to enforce the law on people who've been imprisoned. Mm-hmm. Do we not care about them either? Where are we going with this? How far does it go before we're like, whatever, anybody who touches that jail, that prison, they just deserve to die because whatever.
We have to fight this continuing battle just to get people to not be absolutely awful. And, you know, I'm putting that in a ridiculous way. But, yeah, like prisoners are still people. They still deserve some sort of respect and right to life, it would seem like. Yeah. So look, we're talking about over 1,000 people there. Perhaps we'll find out more. Obviously, fingers crossed that nothing terrible happens there, because there's nothing else they can do about it. They're going to be riding it out whether they want to or not, unless I suppose some people abandon their posts. Okay, now moving on. I had talked previously about how bad the upcoming situation as hurricane storm was on yesterday's show. Let's bring up this first tweet from Philip Klotzbach talking about the Atlantic now has three hurricanes at the same time, Florence, Helene, and Isaac, the 11th year on record that it's had three hurricanes. That used to be a kind of rare thing. You're seeing the other years there, and you have multi-decade gaps there at various points where you don't. Or even into the 90s, you had a 15-year gap. You know, you had a 12-year gap between 98 and 2010. No, so we've got a bunch of them, obviously. That's becoming more common. And if you bring up this next, this is the graphic that I had alluded to yesterday. If we advance to the next one, you're going to see all of the different hurricanes and tropical storms currently there. Those are all moving. Now, many of those are not going to make landfall. Some will simply dissipate. That is expected. But you now have a situation where you have any number of different possible storms that could become absolutely disastrous calamities if things go wrong.
Well, that's just what happens. You know, it's the normal evolution of our planet, John.
Yeah.
It's nothing
apparently
else
it's
going on here.
Probably sunspots, I would say. Normal cyclical variation in hurricane formation. Some people would have you believe that.
Well, as long as there's another sonic boom from, was it Alaska that John Kerry
was?
It
was Antarctica.
Oh, he went to Antarctica.
Shot a laser beam and fused two hurricanes together. This is literally something people believe on the internet. We have to fight against so many things.
But despite that, scientists that have proven climate change is affected by man-made, pollutions, mm-hmm. in, among other things, they're all being paid to lie to us. Mm-hmm. But things like supersonic waves, I'm not even sure what it was that John Kerry shot out of his... I think he shot out of his eyes.
That's crazy. Now you're being ridiculous, JR.
I think his son is Cyclops.
He might be. Would you like to hear one of the worst developments having to do with hurricanes in the past 24 hours?
Yes.
So this is something that I saw yesterday in our election coverage on TYT. We're doing a primary election coverage. We'll be doing it tonight and tomorrow night as well, so feel free to tune in live. And I saw that Rachel Maddow had Senator Jeff Merkley on, who had documents showing that the Trump administration had transferred nearly $10 million from FEMA to ICE just ahead of hurricane season. They're going to be using that money to beef up detention centers, which they want to put obviously more people in and keep them for longer periods of time. So this is something that they did in advance of hurricane season now, which would be in any year a ridiculous prioritization of money. But this is coming after last year when we had Texas. You know, forget about Puerto Rico for a second. Texas was devastating. And then obviously with Puerto Rico, we had one of the worst disaster responses in American history with over 3,000 people dying. After that experience, Donald Trump says, you know what? We need more money for ICE. We need to lock up more kids and keep them for longer periods of time. So screw disaster preparedness. We're going to take that funds and give it to immigration.
Which one of these is better for the base of hateful people that helped get him into office? That's
for their feelings or for their lives? Because a lot of them live on the coast.
Who cares about their lives? Again, that's what happens when you have...
We do, by the way.
We do. But that's what happens. I'm talking about that's the thought process for this kind of move. That's what happens when you have minions. You know,
yeah, that's
true. They're dispensable. You're like, I've got several million of them. If I lose a couple hundred thousand, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Who cares if they die? If the job situation that I put them in leads them to many kinds of deaths. We talked about how in certain areas of the country there was more kinds of deaths since this guy has been in office, which were enhanced because of things like that. So whenever you have people who are just willing to follow blindly, you don't care about them. They're just they're mindless two eyes looking at you, and you go, whatever. It can end. It's fine with me.
Like people will do so much to protect their lives in certain areas. So if they're concerned about international terrorism, they'll build a wall along the entire southern border to stop terrorists from coming across that aren't even coming across. But there's certain things they won't do. So Donald Trump, yesterday in a press conference, said that the response to Hurricane Maria, the situation in Puerto Rico, was one of the unsung songs of success in our time. 3,000 people died. If the bus driver that your kids went on the bus to get to school got in an accident, totally his fault, had lost three kids, and then did a press conference and said, you know what, I really don't think I'm getting enough credit for how amazingly I handled that. Would you put your kids on that bus the next day? Of course you wouldn't. And here Donald Trump is saying, not only does the record show that he will not protect you, that he is not either equipped or interested in protecting Americans from natural disasters, it's that even once he fails, he will brag to you about how awesome of a job he did. This is not hypothetical. This is not us talking during the campaign. You should be worried because he doesn't know what he's doing. He's incompetent. This is us responding to thousands who have died due to his lack of action or lack of interest. It's already in the historical record, and he is gearing up to do it again this year.
So moves like this, again, it illustrates what you get signals for this guy. Okay, so when he's running for office, and he shows how much of a racist he is. So you know he's not going to care about certain folks. So he's willing to take $10 million from FEMA, which is from other Americans, and send it to making sure that he has more detention centers for more children that he already separated and said this is going to be a policy of getting of deterring them from coming into the country with their families at 3 years old or 18 months old. Anyway, so he moves all this money for that. We had illustrations of how he would do this because he shows he's a hateful person. All he cares about is self-aggrandizing. So once he's going that direction, how are we surprised about this anymore? On guns, kids get killed in schools. He does nothing about, and the rest of the Republican Party does nothing about. Now the hurricane disaster relief. It's perfectly fine. It's the best ever. How is it we can keep buying this sad story he keeps selling?
But some people do. I mean, his approval rating is going down, so not everybody, but some people do. Okay, we are going to take our second break. When we come back, we're going to have that study on guns. Which sorts of guns lead to the most deaths in mass shootings? Shocking data after this. Welcome back, everyone. Now let's transition to that study that I've been teasing during this episode. This has to do with mass gun violence, a big study of FBI data on nearly 250 active shooter incidents since the year 2000. Almost 900 people wounded, 718 killed in these incidents, and it compares the lethality and number of people injured when the shooter has a semi-automatic weapon versus a non-semi-automatic weapon. For those who are not familiar, a semi-automatic weapon is one in which a pull of the trigger both discharges a bullet and also recocks the weapon so that another pull of the trigger will fire another bullet rather than you having to do something else in the interim. It allows, obviously, for more shots to be fired in a smaller period of time. And the most important, I guess, headline version of this is that gunmen with semi-automatic rifles wound and kill twice as many people as those using non-automatic weapons. They mean non-semi-automatic there. Although the chances of dying if shot were with either type of weapon are the same. So I just want to be clear about one thing. I'm a little bit confused about their data because in that particular sentence, they say semi-automatic rifles. In other areas of the study, they say semi-automatic weapons. There are semi-automatic pistols as well.
Right.
So the most important takeaway is that when people have this type of gun, they're able to injure more people, obviously, because they can fire more bullets, hit more people in a smaller period of time.
Yeah,
so I mean, let's talk about that first.
Yeah, so I mean, it's so as far as adding to that being, I guess the difference between a rifle and potentially a handgun is that the number of bullets you can get before you have to reload it all.
To some extent, right? Yes. So generally, clip size in a rifle is going to be larger. They can have extended mags and things like that. Some handguns do as well, but it is more rare. Mm-hmm. The thing that confused me was they say that if you are shot in either case, your chance of dying is just as high. And that's where I think they might be conflating semi-automatic rifles with semi-automatic weapons. A semi-automatic rifle is going to have a larger caliber bullet than most handguns and thus do more damage. But a semi-automatic handgun is just by nature of its semi-automatic status not more damaging than a revolver or something like that.
Yeah, I was wondering if the damage of the bullet or potential to get shot quicker.
But there's no question that if you get shot by an AR, it's going to do more damage than, you know, a Glock or something like that. They're bigger bullets. They cause fist-sized injuries. We've talked about that before on the show. Let's break down how this actually plays out in particular instances, though. The average number of people wounded in semi-automatic attacks totaled nearly 6 versus about 3 in attacks with a non-automatic weapon. Roughly 4 people were killed on average in semi-automatic attacks compared with about 2 in other attacks. So, not to put too fine a point on it, we're talking about 2 extra people on average who'll be killed if that person, the gunman, has access to a semi-automatic weapon. So when we are talking about whether people should have access to certain types of guns, this is the human cost per incident that we're talking about on average.
So I guess the benefit for having semi-automatic weapons is, I mean, since the uses that we toddle out are hunting and self-defense, intruders, things like that. So if you go into your home and there's 25 to 30 intruders in, you can take out more of them. If you're hunting wild animals, ducks, maybe some deer, if there's about a pack of 30 deer, you can take down more of them because you need your semi-automatic weapon to make sure that they don't all get away.
Yeah.
Or there's a good use for semi-automatic weapons where you can kill more people. Now, if that's not your intent when you bought it, that's fine. That's you. There's plenty of other people who that wasn't their intent when they bought it. But they developed an intent. And they eventually wanted to do something else with these weapons. And it's happened. It's not like this is a made-up scenario. It's happened over and over and over again. So your other reasoning for having these things, just I don't think it outweighs what the reality is of what happens way more. So fine, you want to shoot more ducks, but I don't know if that's really the reason you have it.
Yeah, again, as we always say, and you're alluding to there, when we have these debates, we have to have debates with people who have insane fantasies in their mind. And they address the real world as if their crazed fantasies of their hero complex and all that, and the situations they think are going to play out, and you know, seven vigilantes are going to attack their house in the dead of night. Like, that's how we have to legislate, based on that, not based on decades of insane levels of rising gun violence. That's a frustrating situation to be in. I am a person of many fantasies. I like Lord of the Rings. We don't legislate based on hobbits, but in this particular case, we do have to do that.
You know what I like? And John, and what? we just not disagree, but we're on opposite ends of this. I love fast cars. I love polluting fast cars. I love them. I want a race car. I want a car that's modified so fast that I can go 200 miles an hour real fast. But you know what I can't do? I can't modify my car to make it go 300 miles an hour on the street. The police will see that. They can tell certain cars that have modifications on it that are probably illegal, and they can check it out and be like, oh, you're not supposed to have this on your car. And I'm like, hey, I'm a red-blooded American. I like to speed. That's a fantasy of mine. But you know, people die, and they kill other people when they do this sometimes because they don't really know how to control cars to get that fast. There's reasons for laws.
Yes.
We can have them in other arenas as well.
Yeah, and you can watch Fast and Furious movies. They're quite good, actually. Plots don't make any sense, but they're exciting, especially since The Rock joined it. Okay, let's move on to a very serious situation. We talked earlier this week, Botham Shemjan is the individual who was killed inside of his own home by a Dallas police officer, Amber Geiger. We now have a few updates on that situation. Again, Amber Geiger had been arrested after a couple of days. Her name was withheld for about 48 hours. She has been arrested, is out on bail. And the story that she has been given about what happened keeps changing. Originally, she was trying to get into her own apartment, we heard. She used her key fob multiple times to try to get in. It wouldn't allow her in because it's not her apartment. And then it led to the shooting. Then it was that the door was ajar, and so she was investigating, which isn't true. But even if it were true, I could walk through an apartment complex. If a door is ajar, how is that any of my business? Doors can be left ajar. But this one wasn't. So Sean King posted a video of people inside of that apartment complex showing how the doors, like Botham Shemjan's door, actually works. Here is a video of that. And it will really get into whether these doors can be left ajar.
This is my key. This is my fob. I turn it. I open. Let me see if my door stays ajar. Nope. Lies.
They cannot be left ajar. They close automatically. That's the type of door it is. So great job in having that be your second draft story on what actually happened. Something that is so easily refuted by all of the individuals living in the apartment complex where the incident happened.
Well, I'd like to know, because as we're hearing from some of the accounts, there was also other things being said that don't match up with her story as well. It was the banging on the door, and they heard a female voice saying, let me in, or to that effect. And then apparently the victim's last words being, why would you do this? You know, that's what they also heard. So it didn't seem much like a, hey, I don't know who this guy was, or as soon as I step in the apartment, there's something else going on. With all the holes, you can't even figure out what the reality of what really happened was.
Yeah.
If there was some dispute previous to it, if they knew each other somehow from being neighbors, and then there was some anger based off of that, you can't figure it all out. But when someone who is the perpetrator lies consistently, then we know that something fishy is going on. Why can't we can't come to that conclusion yet?
Yeah. And the need to continually change your story so much inside of just a couple of days, that should not reassure anyone about what actually happened there. But I do want to check in with NRA TV. This is a person being shot by a cop. It's always interesting to see how they're going to attempt to cover their behinds in this situation. So here is Dana Loesch. She has a very interesting theory about how this could have played out in a different hypothetical.
You know, this could have been very different if Botham Jean had been, say, he was a law-abiding gun owner and he saw somebody coming into his apartment. I don't think there's any context in that that the action would have been justified. I mean, if I see somebody coming into my house and I'm not expecting them and they're walking in like they own the place, I would act to defend myself. And this could have been very differently had he actually had a firearm on him. Maybe it would be a different individual. She might be the one carried out.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, that would have made almost more sense, right?
Would have made more sense. I'm not sure that that makes sense, though, because what Dana Loesch is saying there is if he had been a law-abiding gun owner, by the way, notice the framing there, that to have law-abiding in your name, you have to be a gun owner. He was law-abiding. He was a law-abiding citizen inside of his own home, being harassed and then killed by a cop out of control. But no, you're not law-abiding unless you have some sort of firearm or cannon or mortar or something like that. So what he should have done is had a gun, and when this police officer started banging on his door, tried to force her way into there, he should have shot her dead. If that had happened, if that hypothetical had happened, if this black individual had killed this white female cop, how would Dana Loesch have greeted that news?
Well, we would have found out what he did in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. How many detentions he had.
What is the most threatening photo of him that has ever been taken?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to go to a quick break. We're going to come back with just a tiny little bit more on this, and then we're going to move on to other news. Charter schools, they're coming for your kids' butts after this. So the push for more charter schools in America is obviously problematic for a lot of different reasons. We're not going to retread all of those in this segment, but I am actually curious about this story and how Jared Jackson, the co-host for today, is going to respond to it. Because apparently now, paddling students will be a disciplinary policy at a Georgia charter school. And parents who don't consent have to agree up to 5 days of suspension for their children instead. So you have paddling or 5 days of suspension at this charter school. So again, this is a school that you are paying for, at the very least if you live in that area. So let's talk about the specifics of how this is going to play out. The Georgia School for Innovation and the Classics. Yeah, I've always thought that paddling was a classic. sent parents a letter last week asking permission to hit children with a wooden paddle. Superintendent Jody Boulineau says the kindergarten through ninth grade school has received a little more than 100 of the forms back, and a third of them give consent to use the paddle, which that should be national news by itself. But they're going to be paddling these kids. By the way, up to ninth grade, you're talking about teenagers at that point that these teachers or whatever will be taking and paddling on the butt. That bothers me for so many different reasons.
Give
what do you think?
One.
The perviness of it.
Okay, there's one.
I don't want you having any interest in the butts of kids, let alone ninth grade kids, and being able to skulk around the school trying to find some sort of infraction that will allow you to take this kid and paddle them.
We continue to put our trust in these. Teachers are just other people with whatever weird proclivities they have in life, whatever things they like to do, or anger problems, or disdain for certain children, or biases because of who certain kids are. All that goes into play, and they can make a decision to hit your child up to three times, I think it says.
Yes.
Up to three times in one session.
Spanked on the buttocks in an office with closed doors and shouldn't be struck more than three times. So
with your hands on either a piece of furniture or on your knees. I want you to imagine your child bent over in front of some stranger, keep it real, while they paddle your child while you're somewhere at work or at home or whatever it is you have to do during your day, and you write a piece of paper that says, do that.
That's
failed.
Insane.
You just failed.
Yeah, I was talking before the show with Brett. Some of the biggest, longest arguments I've ever gotten into with my best friend were over corporal punishment. He comes from Alabama. He believes it's perfectly acceptable. It's a traditional thing. There's nothing wrong with it. I come from Connecticut. I was spanked once or twice as a kid. And I remember even as a kid thinking, this is kind of weird. also not that bad. This really is not going to change my behavior, but this was like East Coast, Northern East Coast spanking. This wasn't paddling or anything like that. I think of it as using the threat or the actuality of violence to change someone's behavior, which there's no area of society except for, I guess, capital punishment for prisoners where we allow that. Except amongst kids who have the least ability to understand what's happening to them and to do anything about it. We say in that case, with the most vulnerable people in society, yes, you can hit them if you don't like what they're doing. Nowhere else. If I do something that Cenk doesn't like, Cenk can't hit me. Even though I'm bigger, I could theoretically defend myself. I'm a full grown adult. I can sort of put it in context with the rest of my life. Kids can't do that. They can be hit though. So and now they can be hit in charter schools.
Yeah, at what point does it not transfer over to the kid thinking, hey, the way to solve problems is to hit? Now, if that happens, then are you upset about it? Are you going, hey, I can't believe, you know, little Billy over there keeps hitting people? Maybe because he keeps getting hit. Mm-hmm. Can't believe Billy has anger problems. Maybe because he's being hit and he doesn't know how else to let it out. Because when you get hit, you know what you want to do? You want to respond.
Mm-hmm. Especially some of these kids will be paddled for the rule violation of hitting people. There's some delicious irony for them. I guess that's another one of those classics they'll be dealing with. And I understand that people disagree with this. There's a huge disagreement across our country. Many people will not like my position. Feel free. Look, I like constructive criticism. Go on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and a review saying, I love John, I love the damage report, but I disagree with him on corporal punishment. So feel free to go do that and I will see that.
Yeah.
But people do disagree, but we talk constantly about whether kids should be able to indoctrinate kids into certain ideologies. This is definitely a component of an ideology, the use of violence to control behavior. And now we're saying, you know what? More schools should be doing it.
You know, I was somewhat regularly spanked growing up. Like, the thing is that I was an angel child, so it didn't happen that much. But if I was a bad kid, it would happen all the time because that was just a normalcy in my house. Mm-hmm. But me being the perfect child that I was, it didn't happen that much. But in reality, once you have the fear of that happening, there's no the next time you want to do something, you don't go, I got spanked last time. What you think is, oh, even if you make a mistake, because what it turns into from the parental point of view is frustration, anger about what happened. If a kid accidentally drops and breaks a plate, I'm like, oh, I can't believe you broke that plate. It's an automatic motion because that's what just happened. Yeah. So should the kid not becomes afraid of doing normal things like having wet hands and breaking a plate, butterfingers, you know?
So it causes anxiety rather than rational shifts in behavior.
And then the argument you'll get from a lot of people, and I've heard this, is, hey, I got spanked, I turned out fine. Hey, you guys, I got spanked and I turned out fine. A lot of people got spanked and did not turn out fine. Mm-hmm. So that's not, you didn't turn out fine because you were spanked. You turned out fine despite being spanked.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And any one individual could have turned out finer, possibly. Just because you're not going on homicidal killing sprees doesn't mean you don't have some weird anxieties and things about authority that you don't understand. I got spanked and I turned out this way. So, you know, take that however
you will. And number two, how many people turned out fine after being spanked by someone else and their parents said, hey, I'm going to give them permission? How much of a betrayal does that kid feel from his parents? Yeah. If your parents spank you, you're like, ah, mom.
I would ask you this one question. How confident are you that every individual at this school and at future schools who will do it will be doing it for the right reasons, under the right conditions, and won't have any sort of weird motivations for what they're doing? Are you confident about that in all cases? Because if you're not, what we are saying is in 5 years, I will come back and I will do a story about some weird sexual assault situation involving kids. And we started down that path with allowing these sorts of situations to happen. Okay, how long do we have in this block? 1 minute. Okay, let's do this relatively fast. Yesterday was 9/11. People express, you know, their feelings about the event in different ways. I don't know that I tweeted about it at all, but Michael and I did talk about it on the show. Here is what one extremely popular right-wing pundit chose to say on that day. Tommy Lauren tweeted, 17 years ago, Americans of all races, backgrounds, and political affiliations came together under the flag to comfort one another, hold our nation together, and fight for our values as Americans. She should have stopped there. Today, we have high-paid athletes who refuse to even stand to honor those values. Sad. So they're obviously trying to appeal to the Trump crowd. So she said, you know what? This whole 9/11 thing, not enough to talk about that. I have to attack Colin Kaepernick because I am so infuriated by this African-American social movement. That is despicable. And it would have been the easiest thing in the world to to produce a tweet, just end it before that. It wouldn't be accurate. The rest of the tweet is not accurate. That is not really what America did. Mm-hmm. But at least we would be sympathetic towards what she's saying. Instead, it's used to attack Colin Kaepernick because she knows her fans will absolutely love that.
That's the whole point. Or you could say 17 years ago, it was 9/11.
That's what Donald Trump did. Weird response there. Unfortunately, we don't have our segment Garbage People ready to go yet. She would have been the first. Oh, well. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Donald Trump thinking now about impeachment. But hey, maybe it wouldn't be that bad of a thing after this. Welcome back to the show, everyone. We just spent the break watching hippo attack videos. Hippopotamuses are alien and terrifying. And we need to finally do something about them as a species. No, they're an amazing, majestic creature that is horrifying. Okay, we turn now to the midterms because I want to close out the show presenting to JR Donald Trump's theory about the midterms, the chance of impeachment, and what would happen were he to be impeached. Because Donald Trump, at the very least in his statements, wants people to believe that there is nothing bad that has ever happened to him, nothing bad that could ever happen to him. And here's an example of that. So this is coming from Axios. He has repeated to folks in the White House that if the Democrats impeach him, it would be a victory politically because it would be a complete overreach and he could exploit it and run against it in 2020. And he said specifically that he would then be able to say that they are unfairly targeting him and investigating him, which, by the way, he has been doing since day one of his presidency. I don't know why that would change. But Donald Trump saying that impeachment would only guarantee his reelection, do you think that would actually happen? And do you buy that that's what he actually thinks?
I'm buying that that's what is the last thing he's reaching for, because I think he forecasts some defeat in November. So
he keeps saying
that,
red wave.
Yeah, that's the insecure.
You don't think
response.
He believes it?
Yeah. Not at all. So he's worried about that outcome. I mean, right before he got elected, he was saying, this is going to be a rigged election. I'm going to lose. And when I lose, it's going to be a problem. When I lose. Then he won. He's like, oh, now what do I do? Yeah. But so in response, if that happens the way that everyone's forecasting it, including him, to happen, he's like, best case scenario. Okay, they're going to come and they're going to impeach me, which I don't even think they will. They're going to come and they're going to impeach me. And then the best thing I can do then is use it to run in 2020 to say they're being so unfair to me. What this actually is, it's an indictment of his supporters from his own brain. Again, he's done it 1,000 times. You guys are so stupid, my supporters, that you don't care about any policy. You don't care about anything I said I've done for you, which I haven't, or will do for you if I get reelected in 2020. Mm-hmm. It's all about you're going to be so mad because of what they did to your guy.
Yeah.
What kind of way is that to be a leader of a country? The supposed best country in the world. Mm-hmm. Your approach to getting reelected is, can you believe what they did to me? Mm-hmm. That's the approach?
People like the Republicans like to say that was how people were attached to Barack Obama. But I've spoken with a lot of people who really like Barack Obama, even people who like him more than me. And, you know, obviously I've talked constantly about disagreements I have in terms of policy. We don't talk about Barack Obama that way. Like, so divorced from any considerations of policy or even ideology. Just this familial cult leader type relationship that they have.
Because you don't have to know what he's going to do or what he wants to do. It doesn't matter as long as you support him blindly.
Yeah.
That's the approach.
Well, and especially if what you're getting out of this is that whatever it is that he does, it pisses off the left. It produces snowflake tears. If that's what you want, then it doesn't matter if he's ballooning the deficit or getting rid of the deficit. If you think it's going to cause libs to cry, you're going to support him. That's no way to run a political party. So if we could just jump right ahead, though, in terms of the midterms, will this actually happen? First of all, the Dems would have to take the House. I don't even think it's guaranteed then. But as of right now, registered voters apparently prefer the Democratic candidate. 52-38, a 14-point advantage, according to a new poll by Quinnipiac. But understand that in the past 6 weeks, it's increased from 4 points to 14. But it had been pretty high earlier than that. So in 6 weeks, it can change by 10 points. There are far more than 6 weeks left to go in these midterm elections. So you can look at these numbers and feel a little burst of hope. That's good. That's understandable. But don't rest on your laurels, because that can go back down to 4 or even -4 just as easily. And don't put it past Donald Trump or any of these Republicans to do something tricky, something fishy, to get people to
something
rally
like
behind the
president. Something like what, John Otarola?
I don't know. I don't know, some sort of Ron DeSantis type
Beware
app.
Beware of a conflict is all I'm gonna say.
Or just, you know, like exaggerating something. Mm-hmm. We have serious international situations. Do we know that Idlib, you know, we've got situations in Syria, situations with North Korea. God only knows what could be focused on by the president and then by the knee-jerk reaction of the media.
We're also instigated by the president.
Or instigated by the president as well.
Internationally.
Okay, anyway.
I'm just gonna say that
we're less than 60 days away, but still that's forever. JR, thank you for joining me. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for watching. Go rate the podcast. Send me a screenshot of it, please. And I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.